I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guests are members of the Social Justice Sewing Academy. The Social Justice Sewing Academy holds hands-on workshops in schools, prisons, and community centers nationwide, empowering young people to use textile art as a vehicle for personal transformation and community cohesion, to become agents of social change. They share their stories, often related to issues like gender, discrimination, mass incarceration, gun violence, and gentrification, through powerful imagery created in cloth. Their exhibition, Connecting Threads, Quilts from the Social Justice Sewing Academy, is currently on view at the Katz Snyder Gallery at the Jewish Community Center, located at 3200 California Street in San Francisco, through November 4th. Joining us this hour are Social Justice Sewing Academy founder and executive director Sarah Trail, core members Nancy Williams and Colleen Harridan, and artists Brian Robinson, Juan Tapia, and Anne Guillaume. And now, join me on stage at the JCCSF as I introduce our guests. First, we have Sarah Trail, the woman who started Social Justice Sewing Academy after graduating from the Harvard University Graduate School of Education. She created SJSA as a platform where youth create art that engages and educates communities, and we'll talk a lot more about that soon. Nancy Williams is a Bay Area-based long-arm quilter. She's been sewing for over 50 years and is the long-arm artist for all of the SJSA quilts. Next to her is Colleen Harrigan, who pieces all the quilts together, so can talk more about that. And then we have three SJSA artists here. We're so lucky and honored to have them. We have Brian Robinson in the middle, an 18-year-old who's starting at UC Davis on the 23rd. Very soon, he will major in theater and dance with a minor in architectural design and hopes his artwork will be able to speak to people and show them what is going on in the world. We have Anne Guillaume, a 17-year-old senior at Richmond High School who believes youth should remain hopeful of the future despite events happening around them. She uses pictures and words to challenge the assumptions of her generation, creating a better image for her school and community. And next to me to my left, Juan Tapia, an 18-year-old student preparing to start Shebo College in the spring with a major in computer science and a minor in Chicano studies. And he hopes his artwork can shine light on the social issues and lived experiences of those in his community. So we're so excited you're all here. I just want to start by walking through the origin of Social Justice Sewing Academy with Sarah and some of the steps of the process with the group. So Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started the academy?
I've been sewing since I was four. My grandma taught me. I was placed in like intermediate quilting classes from like the age of 8 till 12. And then around the age 13, CNT Publishing offered me a book deal to teach kids how to sew. So I did a book deal. Then CNT followed up with a DVD deal. Then FabriQuilt made me an offer to design a fabric collection. Then Simplicity contacted me, flew me out to New York, and I designed a Simplicity pattern collection all before the age of 15.
So you're like a quilting prodigy phenom. And your parents are here. Should we give a little shout out? Thank you.
Yes, to mom and dad. Who took me around quilt classes and consistently, even though I'd get kicked out sometimes, they'd still pay for quilt classes and Joann's and prom dress design and drafting patterns and like from A to B, from paper piecing to making a wedding ring quilt. Like I could really just kind of focus and kind of do it all. Not necessarily excellent, but I had a decent grasp and lots of issues, but it wasn't till really my senior year in high school that when Trayvon Martin was murdered, it was like he was murdered February 26th. His birthday was February 5th, 1995. And my birthday is February 19th, 1995. So he was literally 2 weeks older than me. And when he was murdered, I think it had hit home. I've always been, you know, I think decently sociopolitically aware. But really that murder was just like, wow. And then once Zimmerman walked off and compounded with just other issues, it really like if I'm getting ready to spend 100 hours sewing, making a double wedding ring quilt or making a prom dress for a friend, I didn't think that my sewing was having like a message. It wasn't that it wasn't important. I still loved sewing. But if I'm going to do something that I loved regardless, it needed to have a message bigger than just making something for the love of making it. So at that point, I was like, I didn't renew any Simplicity. I didn't renew any contracts. And I was like, I'm going to make a social justice art quote. Those aren't things that have patterns because you make like it's raw edge applique. It's kind of raw organic sakwa techniques as opposed to buying a pattern and, you know, creating someone's pattern. So my sponsors weren't very happy with me, but it was okay. I made the Trayvon Martin quilt, which is hanging on the wall. And after that, like I showed it at churches and just like not as a, you know, like we need to do something. It needs to be bigger than this. This is a memorial. He's gone, but not forgotten. We still need to be doing more. The fact that this happened, the Stand Your Ground law, there's policies we can challenge. There's lots of actions that we can be taking. So it was kind of like as a talking piece to spur people to action, not to just admire, look, say, oh, that's great. The end. But at the end of the day, people weren't admiring a quilt with a dead boy's face on it. Like it wasn't something that people just wanted to, you know, people didn't, oh, I want to make that. It wasn't about repeating it. It was about, let's not forget. Let's do something. So that was kind of, I guess, the call. And then as I talked to younger kids, they were like, well, I want to make a quilt about, you know, sex trafficking or this stuff happening international or, you know, kids getting human trafficked from Costa Rica. And I'm like, well, then let's all have a platform to make social justice art. But my sponsors were like, well, we want you to be selling patterns and making stuff for other people to do. And I'm like, well, it's okay. Let's make it free. And that wasn't something that they were necessarily on board with either. So talking to the mentors and the cool people that I knew, they were able to donate fabric and us to be able to have a free, I guess a more equitable space to create art, not just with the intent of sewing, but as intent of a brave space to have, you know, conversations and create art about issues and things that we were really concerned with. And so we had a 6-week summer program. And in that 6-week summer program, Brian and Juan made their first art quilt. And so it was just 6 weeks, Monday through Friday, all summer. And, you know.
So that was the very first Social Justice Sewing Academy workshop that Brian and Juan participated in. And where was that? And how did you even set that up?
At UC Berkeley. So I graduated and I wrote a grant and they funded it. And they were just like, yeah, not only can you have a grant, but you can have space. So.
And what year was that?
Summer 2016.
Okay. So you got money from UC Berkeley where you had gone. And just as an aside, can you tell us how old you were when you started at Berkeley?
I was 16.
Right. Just in case we weren't sure how incredible. Okay. So you graduated from Berkeley. You were how old?
20.
Okay. 20 years old. You get a grant. You have passion and a plan. And then how do you actually go about setting up a 6-week workshop, finding people to participate?
Reached out to high schools, set a program curriculum, proposed it to TRIO, got in partnership with Upward Bound TRIO, found an established group. So it's like I needed kids to be there. It's sewing something you can't start a quilt and then not decide to come back. I need the same demographic to be coming back all the time because it's not a pick it up, drop it. Like kids wouldn't finish another kid's quilt. So I had to work, find a summer partnership. Upward Bound partnered with me. UC Berkeley gave us a space. We had lunch. We had BART stipends. We had lots of stuff. So.
Okay. And so maybe we'll take a little side journey into that workshop because we have Brian and Juan here who participated. So I'm wondering if you can each talk about how you found yourself in the Upward Bound program and what your sort of initial thoughts and reactions were when how you heard about the quilt workshop that you'd be participating in it.
Well, basically, Upward Bound program, they gave us a class schedule, and one of the classes was social justice, and that's the first time I met Sarah. And she basically, with that class, she basically just let me open up and experience what I felt in social justice and how can I express myself in it. And with the 6 weeks, I didn't never sew before, and she taught me how to do everything just from scratch, and her and Robin. And from there, we just made a whole quilt in 6 weeks, and
my story was a little bit different. They told us to pick our classes, like the least favorite and the most, like the one that you want the most. And I ended up doing it backwards. And I ended up getting put in her class. And it was like, I didn't expect it to be as fun as it was. It was also like my first time sewing, so it was cool.
So when you knew you were in, both willingly and maybe a little more of a surprise, that this was your class, did you already know what you wanted your quilts to be about, or was that a hard process to choose?
For me, Sarah had to kind of draw it out of me. And my issue was police brutality. My brother, he was affected by it. So that's why when Sarah, I didn't know what I wanted to choose. And she just kept saying, what is affecting you in your life? Like, what can you focus on? And I didn't know. And then when I thought of my brother, she was like, yeah. And she helped me from the first day. We just kept going and going and adding more things to the quilt. And from her, I didn't know what I was going to choose until she drew it out of me. and I chose it.
And can you tell us a little bit about your quilt? Unfortunately, it's not on display here because it's at a church in Berkeley, right? So can you describe it to us?
My quilt is titled Born a Crime, and it's a black man in the middle with two guns pointed at him, and it reads Tamir Rice, Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, and it has bullet shots at the bottom of it to represent even more people who were affected by police brutality, because I couldn't fit it all the names I wanted to. And my brother, he was the black man. I tried to go off of him. He was the black man who I was doing in the picture. And the coloring, the fabric, everything is colorful. Two hands on sides. So there's a white hand and a black hand, just to say that it's not focused on one race, both races. It's towards police brutality. And the embroidery through everything, we did that on our own. My first time, just again, say it was my first time. And I had fun. I enjoyed it. And it came out nice. I feel like it came out nice. Yeah.
So you had your idea. You knew what you wanted to make your quilt about. How did you translate the idea into, like, the fit to decide, like, make those artistic decisions about what you were going to put in the quilt?
First, before we even started, Sarah had a sketch. So we was like, sketch what you want to do. And she gave us this big old poster, white poster, just to draw. And we drew on it. And first, I didn't know that you had to do all the different color schemes inside of a quilt. So I just said, okay, this part is going to be one color. This part is going to be it. That's it. She's like, no, you have to actually show the highlights in the face, show the highlights in the hand, show the different, the balances of different colors and everything. And she took us to the fabric shop, and she literally told us to get a basket, and we just start throwing different fabrics inside the basket. And we didn't know why we were going to use it, but Sarah had an image in her head, like, she knows why we're going to use it. And it started coming together. We start pinning everything onto the white paper, and after that, we started sewing everything down.
And what was the most challenging part of the process for you, Brian?
The most challenging part. I will say, the embroidery. That was the most challenging part for me. And the fact, since my brother, he was affected through police brutality, me getting through that and just rerunning that in my head and over and just saying, this is what really happened to me. But the embroidery, I didn't know how much detail you had to go into it, the time that it took, and I say, if it wasn't for Robin and Sarah, I don't think I would be able to finish without them. And it was just the needles in my fingers, everything. And it was hard, but at the end, we kept looking at the bigger picture and to see what it came out. And it came out, like I said, I think it came out nicely.
Yeah, it's an amazing quilt, and you can see it on the Social Justice Sewing Academy website and Instagram account. So after that workshop, how did you have new skills or different ways of thinking about the world?
Yes, skills. I can sew on a button if you need me to. And with that social justice class, it wasn't just a one-time thing like, okay, I did this and that's it. I actually, like, through my community, through my classrooms and stuff in high school, I spoke up about things that I felt that was going wrong in the world, and I actually spoke up. And I recently did another quilt with Sarah, and it's a nice quilt. I would say it's a nice quilt. And I'm glad to do it again because it's just like to express myself. I didn't know how to express myself until I met Sarah, and then it just gave me an idea like, oh my gosh, you're really doing something. You can actually do this. And after that, it was just me speaking up, talking, doing quilts. I hope I could do another one after I get them. just keep doing it. I'm thankful, basically. Yeah.
Nice. So, Juan, you were in the same workshop that Brian was in. We already covered you thought you weren't. It was your last choice. But you're here next to me on stage, which makes me think maybe something changed from it being your last choice.
Yeah, It ended up being like a fun class, but like starting off, it wasn't really like the one that I wanted to do the most. I wanted to do, I forgot it was so long ago. I forgot what I really wanted to do. But then I got into that class and I kind of just started doing what she was telling me to do. And at first I couldn't really think of an image to put on there until like, then she was like, kind of like the same with Brian. She was just like, what is something that's like affecting you or going on in your community? And I was like I was getting evicted from like different houses and I was moving back and forth from Richmond to Oakland. So then it was, well, that's basically what I put my quote is about. It's about eviction and gentrification.
Can you describe it a little bit for us?
The quilt is like, has a beige background. And then I put in bubble letters in capital, I put gentrify this, which was the title of the quilt. And it has a picture of a policeman taking out somebody from his home with an eviction notice in his hand. And the eviction notice explains like how many days he has to leave and for why, what reasons. And then over the man's house is a new condo being built because like I'm from Oakland and that's like right now it's almost close to New York, like rivalry in rent. So a lot of people was getting displaced and I just thought that was like there. Now they just started building new condos in Oakland. So I thought like, well, back then they weren't really built. Now they're built. Back then they were still just like plans and models. And now that like, it's actually a real thing. And yeah, like it was just the fact that a lot of people get displaced with like new condominiums that are coming in for, and they don't really have a section to put people that are from like lower income. So it's like all like high priced.
So it sounds like you, working with Sarah, were able to identify the issue you wanted to talk about in your quilt. Mm-hmm. And then how was the process for you of having that idea and then figuring out how you were going to visually represent it in the quilt?
Visually, I had never seen a quilt ever, like having to do with any issues or anything. So it was kind of like I had to draw up an image. And that was new to me because I've never cut or sewn or done anything with any type of fabric. I haven't even ironed until that day. And yeah, I kind of just got the image of like the condo and the house being squished and the police officer, because those are like common things that most people that get evicted have to go through. Like it's either a police or a sheriff like knocking on your door and then your house is being torn down to build something else. And that's kind of the image that I got from that. And yeah, patterns
and. And what are you the most proud of from the workshop that you took away from it?
The one thing I'm most proud of is like it's still an issue, yep. And that a lot of people now get to see it. That's probably like the thing I'm proud of the most is like putting exposure to that issue.
Mm-hmm. And has it was the workshop and the process of creating that quilt helpful to you in your own life, or has it changed how you interact with the world or?
I see clothes differently now for like how it's made and like the structure and like the fabrics and the material and the quality. And also I see art in a different perspective now. Like I see it broader than just being like paintbrushes and music.
Thank you, Juan. Thank you, Brian. I'm going to veer back into the story of the Social Justice Sewing Academy. So that was your first workshop, 6 weeks at Berkeley in 2016, right? Summer of 2016. Okay. How many students participated, Sarah?
Like 15, like 30 total, but only 15 kids got to make their own quilt. We had an elective class that weren't in my main class, but they were in agreement to work with the main class. They had to like have an elective, so they got to help other kids on their quilt if they opted in. Like Brian would be like, "Oh, you can sew this, but you can't sew this," and then Juan would be like, "You could sew any of it, just make sure your knit stitches are small." Mm-hmm, but after that, yeah. So I think other people, I didn't have the block idea yet, so they didn't mm-hmm. necessarily make blocks. They just, the other kids in the elective class were like, "Why can't I make my own quilt?" And I'm like, "Because I see you an hour a day, and I see them like 4 hours a day."
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So then what was like the next big leap of ideas?
The next big leap. So honestly, it was going to be a one-time summer program. I went to Harvard in the fall. It was a grad program. But then when I got out there, I was kind of like
a little bored, so I started to do workshops.
Just to be clear, so you were Harvard graduate school, a little boring, plenty of free time.
Because I didn't get to see kids. In the graduate school, it's like old people. So I was just like, I didn't have any access. Like, I didn't have high school friends. It's like, you don't go make friends with undergrads. And people at Harvard, like, their perception of fun was like, go to a wine bar and drink. Or like no one went to Six Flags for Halloween. Like, it was just different. The East Coast versus Berkeley is just really different.
You're listening to members of the Social Justice Sewing Academy, including founder and executive director Sarah Trail, core members Nancy Williams and Colleen Harridan, and artists Brian Robinson, Juan Tapia, and Anne Guillaume, on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Their exhibition, Connecting Threads, Quilts from the Social Justice Sewing Academy, is currently on view at the Kat Snyder Gallery at the Jewish Community Center, located at 3200 California Street in San Francisco, through November 4th. The Social Justice Sewing Academy will also be holding a drop-in quilting workshop on Friday, October 12th from 3 p.m. on as part of our Second Friday Shabbat series at the JCCSF. Check the JCCSF website for more information. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
And at Harvard, it wasn't the same like community I had. So I was like, okay, I want to do more SJSA stuff. So I did workshops at high schools. We kind of came up with a block method where instead of having like one group of kids for like maybe 100 hours, like maybe we had that in 6 weeks, we had them just for a few hours. And like, you can make a block. But then it's like, well, I didn't have the capacity to teach kids how to embroider in a two-hour workshop because that takes a long time. The 2 hours are spent in the activity and creating the block. So then we came up with the idea of having embroidery volunteers who like sign up, and then they can take the kids' art and embroider it and then mail it back. So it still gets the same hand-sewn element without like having the kid have to be there for 5-6 hours to learn how to embroider.
So I just want to make sure. So this is like a pretty significant different way to approach the quilt making process. So the initial workshop, one student, one artist, one big quilt, 100 hours of work. And in this new method, new model, you're working with kids for just a few hours maybe at a time, and they're making one quilt square or block.
Correct.
And then how are they attaching it to – how are they like making it?
Oh, with scissors, basting glue, and then we iron it. Mm-hmm. So it's more of the conversation. It's more of them understanding of like, what do they care about? How can they visualize the social justice issue and connect it into a visual image? It's more about the learning that happens in the workshop, mm-hmm. far less about like them getting an absolutely amazing art piece. The embroidery volunteers are really like the motivating drive for what makes community quilts beautiful.
Okay. So who are the embroidery volunteers? Where did they come from?
Yeah,
I think there's probably a bunch.
Yeah. Raise your hand if you ever embroidered for SJSA. So it's like, they can come from Instagram. They can come from, I don't know. I don't necessarily know where they come from, but they're great.
So they sign up on your website.
Yes.
So anyone listening or in this room can go to the SJSA website and sign up to be a volunteer, embroidery
yes.
volunteer. And then what happens?
Then I get their address and I mail them a block accompanied with an artist statement. If the kid, for example, can make a block on this and they've added a street sign and they'd like international embroidered on the street sign to really solidify it for, they meant it was Oakland. So I'm like, okay, so they can put it, if you wouldn't mind, could you please embroider the word international on the street sign that I cut out? Little things like that, or add hair, or could mm-hmm. you add eyes, or mm-hmm. like any little detail that the kid necessarily couldn't cut out in fabric. Mm-hmm. And then they mail it, they get it, then they mail it back to us. And then we have a team of volunteers who will take all the blocks that have come back in the mail from like, you know, the one workshop that we did. And then we'll put it into a community quilt that'll have 20 quilts in rows of 4x5 featuring all the issues that the kids cared about in this certain group of.
Okay. And Colleen, I think this is maybe where you come in. So what happens? You get a bunch of blocks.
Yeah, I'm a piecer. That means I take all of those community blocks and put them together and a scientist. So I sometimes get an option about, I might have an opportunity to choose blocks. Like we did one recently that was primarily focused on Black Lives Matter. And so I went through the block selection and made sure that that topic was loud and clear. And then I'm more of an improv quilter. So I'm not just big blocks of fabric, straight lines. I kind of just start sewing. And so I start to piece these together. Actually, the three of us spend a lot of time initially like laying the blocks out on Nancy's studio floor to figure out the order of things and what's going to look best and not to have too many faces next to each other. So a lot of thought goes into it with the three of us, or we do it through texting. What do you think about this? Move that one to the right. Move this to that. And so we kind of collaborate through the whole process. And then I piece that together and then I pass it on to Nancy where it gets top quilted.
And how did you first hear about the Social Justice Sewing Academy and decide to get involved?
Instagram. Okay. And I volunteered as an embroiderer and I actually didn't really know how to embroider beforehand. I'm like, I could figure it out, and had a good time doing
and
that.
And what was the reason you signed up? What sparked you to participate?
The young woman in the back of the room with the iPhone is one of my children. After the previous presidential, this current president's election, it was a little disheartening, and there's only so many letters and phone calls you can make, and I do art to make myself feel better, and so this was a great avenue for me to do art and then also to speak out for social justice and try to be an example to my children that, hey, I'm trying to make the world better for you. So,
great. Thank you, Colleen.
Sure.
All right. And then Nancy, you and Sarah and Colleen are having everything on your studio floor, and then you're a long arm quilter, and I don't think we all know what that is. It sounds very exciting. Can you tell us about it?
So you don't have to have long arms to be a long arm quilter, but I do have a cartoon with somebody dragging their arms. Who's a quilter here? Anyone's a quilter? So quite a few of you. For those of you who are not, a quilt consists of a pieced or not pieced top, but a top. It consists of batting, which is what makes the quilt, gives it body and gives it some warmth. Batting can be anything. It can be made of wool. It can be an old blanket. It can be part cotton, part polyester. It can be bamboo, so it's batting. And then it's got a backing. So that it's called a quilt sandwich. So in prior times, you've seen pictures, and there may be some pictures up, where there's a quilt, and there's a lot of mostly women around the quilt, and it's called a quilting bee, and they're hand stitching. So what they're doing is through stitches, you know, making that quilt sandwich, putting it together, and adding some strength to it, but also just generally putting it together. So that's one way to do it, is to hand do it. And there are some artists that still do that. It would drive me crazy, but I have done it. But it takes a long time, and they do some beautiful work. Amazing little stitches, as you guys, you know, experienced. So that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is with a domestic machine, which is just a regular sewing machine. And the machine is stitching, you're moving the quilt, which is fine for smaller quilts. When you look at a large size quilt, then it becomes really an act of strength and coordination. So you have to kind of roll it, do a little quilting, unroll it, move it. And so if you've ever done that, you know how difficult that is. I've tailored suits. I've made wedding dresses. I've done a lot of sewing over the years, a lot of quilting over the years. And I did most of my quilts on a domestic machine. And then I acquired a long arm, which I got the space. I think I got the space first and the long arm second. So now it's a long arm machine, which means the quilt is on a frame. It's on rollers, and I move the machine. So it's an industrial size machine. The frame is 12 feet, and I move the machine. So it's kind of like painting with thread. So I'm doing what the quilting bees did, what people did on domestic machines, but I'm doing on a long arm machine. So the quilt is stable, and I'm moving the machine. So that's what long arming is. So it's a little bit of a story. But so I got involved with social justice. I was following the Instagram account, and this has been about 18 months, 2 years. It's been that long. Yeah, a lot of quilts. So I was following it and really appreciated what Sarah was doing and what SJSA was doing. in giving, as everybody has talked about, young folks a method to voice their concerns through art. And as you all know, art in schools is in a lot of ways non-existent, unless you're fortunate to go to an arts-centered school. So this provides that opportunity in an environment that there are a lot of social justice issues. And the focus is for all students, but primarily students that would not have that opportunity otherwise. So I appreciated that. And so Sarah put something on Instagram saying, you know, are there any long armors out there? And I sent a note and said, well, I do a little of that. When I did that, she took that notice down. Which I just found out. I'm saying, where are the other ones? So I have been then long-arming for SJSA since then. So what it provides me is really an opportunity to do, Sarah says, do what you want to do. Although we'll put the blocks together and she'll say, well, how are you going to do this? How are you going to do this? And I said, I don't know. I'll do it when I get to it. That goes back to, Juan, what you were talking about is the most difficult thing is the design and trying to figure out what you're going to do. But it allows me to do what I want and to be as creative as I want. What it also shows me is the large number of issues that our young people are facing and that they're very, very concerned about in a very deep way. There's sometimes I will get to a block on a quilt and I am so moved by that I have to go and do another one and come back to that before I can figure out what I'm going to do that will help enhance the message. What our embroiderers do and what I do in long arming, and Colleen has done some quilting of blocks as well, of the smaller quilts, our role is not to overpower it. Our role is to enhance the message. And to help that come out so that what you're seeing when you look at the quilt is the initial message, the power of that initial message. So that's what I do. I have a studio I live in Emeryville. I have a studio in Oakland that's not far from where I live. And we do a lot of brainstorming and piecing and long arming and a number of things in the studio. And Sarah will talk about, we had a workshop this summer with some artists as well. So, yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Sarah, I want to just take a moment to have you tell us a little bit about sort of Social Justice Sewing Academy is in this long lineage and tradition of American activist textile, even thinking about our first flag. And I was wondering if you can share a little bit about that, how you see that lineage, and also maybe tell us a little bit about, we have a quilt that I think your great-great-grandmother made in the exhibition.
Yeah. My great-great-grandmother was an Ethiopian slave who was like 13 when she was bought by a white man who like raped her and then had my great-grandmother. So that history, like, I've always been, you know, pretty well aware of. But seeing she made a quilt, and her quilt was, like, kind of ugly. The quilt was made with really thick cotton thread. Her stitches were not very neat. And I was just like, wow, you know, she needed some help. But I didn't necessarily, this is, like, when I'm, like, 10. Like, this is, my mom's like, Sarah, this is your, you know, this is your history. And I'm just like, oh, this is an ugly quilt. I didn't really like it. But as I got older, I learned to appreciate, like, this is made in the early 1800s or something. Like, she didn't have access to a Bernina or a Pfaff or the things that, you know, or to light. Yeah, lots of things. But this quilt was made with clothes. And so I was just like, she didn't even pick pretty fabrics. So if you can see, like, I think it's in the first box. It's a quilt made by a slave who used really thick thread. And you can even see she didn't even use a piece of batting. There's, like, lumps of cotton. Like, I remember I would see it and I'd pull it. Like, there's still weed parts in the lumps of cotton. So it's like, I saw this and I was just like, this is not the kind of quilts that I make. But as I got older, I've gained a much deeper sense of appreciation for it. But I think overall, like, sewing used to come from, like, a place of resource. People would sew because they needed to make clothes. People would, you know, my grandma made my mom and her sister's clothes. They'd be like, we had to make clothes because it was cheaper to make them than it was to buy them. But now the way sweatshops and child labor, it's like nowadays it's so much cheaper to buy your clothes than it ever is to make it.
And from the age of like 8 to 12, when I would just be making like learning paper piecing and making quilts and wedding rings, and just my dad would be like, "Why do you keep making so many blankets if you don't want me to sleep under them?" I'm like, "It's because I'm learning these patterns. I'm learning the technique. It's not for you to actually sleep under. I'm just trying to learn." I wasn't someone who made quilts to sleep under. I made them, and then I wanted them folded up and put up. I just wanted to master the technique and do the next. Master the technique and do the next. But I think overall, it's come from a history and like a message of just activism and moving forward and kind of decolonizing, you know, just who it is. Like in terms of sewing, some people will be like, "Oh, sewing's for girls," or "Sewing's so gendered." And it's like at the end of the day, sewing, if you look at it just like a medium of just art, it can be so powerful. And I think using sewing with a message, like double that intersection of just really having a message. I don't know if it's been proven or not, but you know, they used to say that, you know, quilts had a message, like that slaves would be able to use for the Underground Railroad, and like things had messages. And if, you know, this was hanging in someone's house, maybe you could sleep there. Maybe, you know, you could get food at this person's house. So I've know just, you know, for the people I've been, my grandma's from the South in Alabama, just talking, they're like, slaves, quilts definitely had a message. So I think kind of going back, just using quilts for a message and not just using them for the comfort of, you know, sleeping under them. I think it's kind of going back to the original roots. Sewing can be like a revolutionary form of resistance if used in the right way.
Thank you. Okay. So we understand now I'm jumping back into the trajectory of the academy. So you're at Harvard, you came up with a community quilt idea. We just learned how that process works. Then where were you teaching workshops? What was sort of the next?
So local high schools, there's high schools all near the campus. People are like, I think at the end of the day, teachers love the idea of not just doing a homework activity or a classroom activity for the teacher to grade. And then, I don't know, the kid keeps it or not. I think the point of SJSA isn't like, it's not about creating quote unquote artists. It's not about the actual quilt itself. It's really about the message that'll naturally get seen. These quilts have been, they hung at Harvard, their quilts hung at Harvard. The Harvard Public Policy School keeps printing kids' quilts in their magazine. They'll be at PIQF in a special exhibit. It's far more or less about the physical art than it is the message and the fact that these youth have spaces in here. Like even being in the JCC, like these are young artists who don't even consider themselves full-time artists that are getting their art seen in places that typically, you know, aren't, I guess, showing and showcasing their type, just first time artists' work in general.
And so you started teaching these workshops locally to where you were in Boston or Cambridge. And then I know they've been all over the country. So then where did you go and how did you
start? I just kind of flew. It's like, in grad school, if you show up or you don't, I mean, professors don't care. So it was really like, "Oh, you want a workshop? Well, I can miss this day of school and I can leave on Wednesday and we can have all day Thursday, Friday. Like, by all means, as long as you write the paper, you're going to be good in grad school." So I kind of just would just.
That was Sarah's mom saying, "I didn't know that about skipping grad school,"
But it's not high school. High school, you have far more attendance matters. Grad school, it wasn't the case. So I would really, you know, go to New York for a weekend, do workshops Thursday, Friday, all day Saturday, Sunday. And then it kind of morphed into like kids wanted to do more than just a block. They wanted to make their own full-time quilts. But teachers couldn't necessarily give, like a history teacher would be like, "Hey, I like your message. I'm actually an abortive volunteer. I'll give you 2 days of my class for you to do your thing." But they wouldn't allow, you know, 2 weeks of their class for their kids to make a quilt. So at that point, it's like I moved back from Harvard. My program was a year. We came back to the Bay. And it's like I wanted to give kids more opportunities to make a quilt, but I didn't necessarily like have 6 weeks to define, do that same type of programming, as I wasn't as connected with Cal. So it's like, let's do weekend workshops at quilt stores that we can have all day Friday, all day Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Richmond High. I talked to like 16 classes of kids and just said, "Hey, my name is Sarah. I started SJSA. These are examples of quilts you made. This opportunity," because I went to Richmond High because the quilt store is in Richmond, really close to the school. So it's like, that's where I met Anne. I said, "Hey, it's going to be a weekend opportunity. You can come all day Saturday and Sunday if need be from 9 to 5. You'll have access. You're in a fabric store. You can create whatever you want. Tabs on me. You know, just create art quilt." So Anne and a few other kids came and they had an opportunity to make an entire quilt in an entire weekend. But they didn't have to do the tedious task of embroidering it. They just got to create the art piece, write their artist statement, have a message. And then we had an amazing volunteer who did all of that.
Yeah. So this is a great opportunity, Anne. Thank you for your patience to share your story. And so Sarah just said she came to your high school and what? Yeah.
Yeah, one day Sarah just came and showed us like quilts that she had made and other people had made. And when we saw those quilts, we were just kind of like in shock. Like, there's such thing as Social Justice Academy that allows different platforms of quilting that will show how issues can be put in art officially and be shown all over the country. And I just thought, like, this is an opportunity for me to actually show what I think about what's going on in the world right now. And from my quilt, there's a piece there that's, well, when I made the quilt, it wasn't that, it was pretty recent when that Las Vegas shooting happened. And that kind of like inspired me to actually like want to put that in my quilt. Well, at first, my quilt was originally supposed to be about mental health, which is also a big part of my quilt. And having my quilt be pieced into different types of issues that's happened in America, which kind of made it perfect to just put them all together.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guests are members of the Social Justice Sewing Academy, including founder and executive director Sarah Trail, core members Nancy Williams and Colleen Harridan, and artists Brian Robinson, Juan Tapia, and Anne Guillaume. Their exhibition, Connecting Threads, Quilts from the Social Justice Sewing Academy, is currently on view at the Kat Snyder Gallery at the Jewish Community Center, located at 3200 California Street in San Francisco, through November 4th. The Social Justice Sewing Academy will also be holding a drop-in quilting workshop on Friday, October 12th from 3 p.m. on, as part of our Second Friday Shabbat series at the JCCSF. Check jccsf.org for more information. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So your quilt is on display in this exhibition. It's called America the Beautiful, and can you describe it for us?
That name is kind of ironic, right? America the Beautiful. Well, the more I see it now, it's kind of like mind-blowing. So the quilt that I had was basically a classroom, and it had students just looking out the window. So it's a classroom with children and in a window pane that's just basically showing what the world's like, what's been happening in the world outside the school. And as a student, I've always just looked at, we always hear and know about what's been happening in the country, and we don't really get to put our own bases on it and actually do something about it. And this was, making the quilt was my chance of putting that issue in it. And the other pieces that were on there were the Boston Marathon bomb and the one from North Carolina, the shooting in the school too. The World Trade Center, 9/11, and yeah.
Can I add to, so Anne's quilt's amazing. One of the things you left off is the classroom setting is actually the American flag upside down, which is an indication of distress. It's a really moving piece, and I just want to make sure, and I thought it was amazing. I actually got to quilt that quilt, so I'm really familiar with it now.
Thank you.
Yeah, clearly SJSA was started by someone who is just special in the universe. Sarah has a lot of vision, certainly a lot of energy. She sees possibilities, but most of all, she has a real, it's all coming from the heart. She has a real desire to provide opportunities for folks that wouldn't have an opportunity to do something like this. I think you can, in talking to the students at here, you see that this really has changed them. And so to think about when you look at the exhibit, and we have, you know, many more quilts and many more blocks and all of that, the impact that Sarah's had on young people and allowing them both the artistic freedom and opportunity, but also to have them think deeply about, you know, the issues that they have. And so this is, she is the heart and soul and the driver of this. We all know that very well. And she's the Energizer Bunny. So I feel very fortunate to have been part of this organization and to have the ability to artistically contribute to these works of art.
And Sarah, actually, I wanted to ask about where Social Justice Sewing Academy is now and where your vision for it for the future. And can you tell us about that?
I would definitely have to say it is really possible because of the community who cares. Because at the end of the day, my embroidery skills are quite pathetic. So I think, yes, it's fun when kids have a vision, but at the end of the day, they couldn't even make any quilt shows without the embroidery volunteers. Embroidery is like, I mean, you poke your fingers, you bleed, it's hard. I know the in and out stitch, but like there's a stitch that's like the blanket stitch, and like there's stitches that just, it's really nice the amount of mentorship that comes from SJSA, the amount of people that, you know, whether they're tired or whether they just, you know, take off time, the amount of people that'll come in and just like it, the last workshop, we had a workshop at EBHQ, which is the East Bay Heritage Quilters, the amount of adults that every kid had their own adult, and that adult was like a professional, like, you know, in their own technique. So I think the amount of like just the pairing of like, yeah, you know, I can have social justice conversation with kids, I can help them come up with great ideas, but being able to have a volunteer that can take their kid's passion and run with it in a way that, you know, I'm not able to because I'm not that great at all. It all thinks cool. I think the community that has come and like backed these kids in such a humble way, in the sense of the quilts are all beautiful, but like the amount of hours, yes, it was a couple hours in creating all the art with kids, but the amount of hours that have gone behind the scenes and piecing the quilt, the amount of hours that have gone in the embroideries, like the embroidery volunteer, like community quilts have hundreds of hours of work because, I mean, including mailing, like time, like it's just, it's really a community effort. And it's like, yes, youth voice is like at the forefront, but it's like behind it is really the community that backs and supports these young kids. And I think that level of empowerment is really, I think, critical and crucial in the sense of the quilting world. If you go to, you know, traditional quilts, not many quilts have messages and not many quilts are all political. So I think allowing the quilt world, not only making space for these quilts, but the quilters in and of themselves making time. Embroidery is a labor of love. And so to have that many volunteers, like at this point, we have over 500 volunteers that will take a block, you know, spend 10, 15 hours, do the block and then mail it back. It's like, I think that the love that the community has for it is definitely a way to like keep pushing forward. Because at the end of the day, if we had a bunch of glued art by kids, it wouldn't be quilts. Like it really wouldn't. Like, and their messages are great, but it's like, not all, I don't necessarily have time to be able to teach kids from start to finish how to embroider. I think the amount of time that embroidery volunteers and community and Nancy, I mean, it's like, here's a quilt a week. Like, it's a lot. Like, everyone puts in a lot of effort. And at the end of the day, it's all from a let these youth voice shine, let these youth issues shine. I think the community's been doing, like, just an amazing job in terms of backing that. But I think the vision or the future, I think in one way, I really want SJSA to disrupt the quilt world in the sense of what's allowed, who's allowed, what's policed, what's not policed. If you go to even PIQF, as much as I'm appreciative that we have a special exhibit in the PIQF.
Can you tell us what PIQF is?
The Pacific International Quilt Festival. And it's like the largest quilt show in California. They don't have an entry spot for youth quilters, like, at all. So I think the quilt world in general, lots of quilt shows don't have like under 18. And it's like at the end of the day, regardless of technique, a kid's first quilt cannot enter against an artist's quilt who's been quilting for 50 years. Even if it's the same, like it's small, it's all raw edge applique. But like, I don't know, Tina's raw edge applique quilt, and she's been quilting for, you know, I don't know how long, couldn't compete against Brian's first time raw edge applique quilt. So I feel in general, as much as the quilt world might be wanting young kids to begin picking up, it's not supportive in the sense of it doesn't give access. It's like so many quilt shows, even QuiltCon, they had an entry fee for they had an access point for youth, but it was like $25 for each kid to submit a quilt. So it's like a couple emails. They definitely made space, but that was because Latifah was like, we're going to waive this fee. But it's like at the end of the day, you can't say, yes, we want young kids to do it, but you're going to have to pay. That basically means you need to have a mom or a grandma. Like, I was fortunate to have two parents who can pay all the entry fees for me to be able to take classes. I just think a lot of kids that would have like love for sewing don't have parents willing to spend $200 on a sewing machine and a rotary cutter kit. And even if they find a cool, you know, machine at a garage sale, you still need someone to teach you how to thread it. You need someone to, you know, run through. You might need oil change. It might just need a quick, I guess,
trip to a shop. I think at the end of the day, sewing is a really, not an equitable, but it's an affluent craft and it's fluent art form. Not all young people have access to that. So I think providing just anyone who wants to learn how to sew can, and be able to have a mentorship pool of like talent that can come and help and support, that means a lot. But I think if I could have the vision for SGSA, would be able to have it like a curriculum where it can be full-time run in, you know, urban high schools that can be tailored to the curriculum that values the lived experiences. A cool aspect of SGSA is the amount of critical, like in the summer class, like they had to write a poem, they had the option to do a research paper. They read Audre Lorde, Toni Morrison, James Baldwin. Like they had critical, they had to do this reading. Then in the afternoon we'd have more time with the fun sewing. But they definitely had an academic piece that, you know, influenced like what is gentrification on systemic level, on policy level, looking at different systems like your world versus, you know, different spheres. And I think really just being able to allow sewing and like let's bring back home ec, but like let's bring back art informed by research and art informed by practice, and let's bring back art with a message, and a message to do something, not just look and say, oh, that's sad. Like SGSA isn't about, you know, stirring sympathy from others, but it's really like, hey, this is happening. What are you doing about it? What are you doing to leverage your privilege in it? What are you doing to help advance the cause? Like, what are you doing in terms of, even if it's simple as like having a conversation with your family about it or posting it on social media? It's a lot of actionable do nows that sometimes the kids will lay out like this. My quilt is about this. Can you call this person, send this person a letter, post it on social media, talk to other people about it, go to your, you know, or even just get out and voting. Like, I think there's lots of, I guess, things you can do, but at the end of the day, it's not just about admiring it, but it's about the actionable steps you can do to, you know, cause some equity or whatever in the world.
Thank you. Can you tell us how we can get involved with Social Justice Sewing Academy? What is most helpful for you?
If you know how to embroider, definitely signing up to be an embroidery volunteer. If you don't, to help at a workshop, you don't need to necessarily have sewing experience. You just need to be able to have conversations with kids, sit down, and just talk them through it. Like, I've had kids come and like the issue will be, I don't know, like dress code at their school. What are they going to draw to like signify this dress code? Just sometimes having that one-on-one conversation to help bring out of them, like what do they care about? What matters? How are they going to show it? Whether are they going to show it on a system level, on a personal level, on a global, like worldwide level, like issues can be seen in lots of levels. So kind of just that one-on-one conversation. If you have a group of kids that you know, or a retired teacher or anything, you could bring it back to those kids, or just, you know, send an email at exhibits. Like, we usually have workshops running at exhibits. And then after this, we have an opportunity for anyone who wants to make a block to make a block.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, everyone. I think we have time for maybe one or two questions from the audience.
I'm standing up because I want to really honor what you've done as artists. It's phenomenal. After my workout today, I wandered upstairs to see your exhibit, and I was brought to tears. Because you touched my heart and soul, and that's what your art did. And it's really profound. And I hope you'll keep going. And I think if I had one question, and maybe we don't have time to answer this, is how has this changed you as a person? And I also want to say that I love the community part, because I feel like the students are being connected with the grandmothers. I am assuming, although I'm sure it's not 100%, that most of the embroidery people are women and that they're the older women. And I love that these two generations are coming together and that you're really supporting at each end something that's really special. Thank you.
The question was, how has it changed me as a person? For me, like I said, before, I was very quiet. I didn't know how to speak up about social justice issues until I met Sarah. And with that, like in my high school, when I was in high school, we would always have these little things after schools. And I will go there and speak up and talk about things that I felt like that was happening in the world that I felt like need to be open to other people to get to know. And now with when I went to UC Davis, they had this little event. And I went up there and I felt open to speak. And that brought me back to Sarah, because without her, I wouldn't be able to do it. So now it's just for me to speak my mind and not like push underneath the rug, just be able to open my mouth and say something, and hopefully it changed somebody else's mind and somebody else will feel it. So.
I've always been like an artistic person. Like I said earlier, I use like poetry and painting as my artistic part. Ever since I did my quilt, I've shown my artistic side more into the world. When I'm in the world, I'm in my classroom, and yeah. I guess it's been an open mining moment for me ever since I made my quilt as well. And just for people to be shocked that I am able to put my artistic more out there. And not a lot of people know me as an artsy person, but yeah.
Thank you.
How it changed my life. So I'm a pretty quiet person, I like to say. Going to those classes, it was like learning something new. It was getting past that stigma that's like only girls. So like other people that were also in that program were like, oh, I'm gonna go build something, yeah, like a rocket, and like shoot it out of a bottle. Like, oh, I'm gonna build a course for a marble to go down a track. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go sew for like 2 hours. and I come from a place where it's like not too many people sew. I'm like a former gang member. My brother's a former gang member. I didn't like going to school because it was like I went to 4 different schools all 4 years of high school. So I wasn't like, I never had a set place, and I didn't really know that many people everywhere I went. So like I met Brian at Ojai. He got me to like my first club and stuff like that. So, yeah, it also gave me like doing that. Like it was kind of like showing issues in my community. I kind of started working towards that same thing too. So I kind of geared into like other cultural centers. And then I actually got an internship and I started working for one, helping like people that are formerly incarcerated and systems impacted kind of like get a job or try to find their way through life. With like, they have an emphasis there at that culture center, like indigenous healing. And then through that one, I got like a fellowship doing like coding. I'm now developing an app to help people like allocate resources to like certain different areas in Oakland. Well, I'm building it now. The app is usually, well, it's going to help us, the people from the organization, get materials and resources to people that need it the most, because sometimes people just throw events and like, oh, here, take all this free stuff to like sometimes people that don't really need it, and sometimes it doesn't really get to the people that need it the most. So I'm trying to help my community in that way, and I guess that's how that program might change my life.
Thank you, Juan. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guests were members of the Social Justice Sewing Academy, including founder and executive director Sarah Trail, core members Nancy Williams and Colleen Harridan, and artists Brian Robinson, Juan Tapia, and Anne Guillaume. Their exhibition, Connecting Threads, Quilts from the Social Justice Sewing Academy, is currently on view at the Kat Snyder Gallery at the Jewish Community Center, located at 3200 California Street in San Francisco, through November 4th. The Social Justice Sewing Academy will also be holding a drop-in quilting workshop on Friday, October 12th from 3 p.m. on, as part of our Second Friday Shabbat series at the JCCSF. Check jccsf.org for more information. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Dan Folds, Alex Espelet, and Lincoln Andrews. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pamantuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.